I call the Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order at, let's see, 8:05 a.m. Thursday, March 6th. Joining me today, we have Representative Calrico, Representative Drummond, Representative Sadler, and myself, Chair Parrish. Our staff today include Lori Rowland from House Records, Max Stanley on teleconference, and Patrick Portnage, my committee aide. We've just been joined by Representative Rauscher. We do have a quorum to conduct business. At this time, I want to remind the committee members and those in the room to silence your cell phones and other electronic devices. We have one item on the agenda today, House Concurrent Resolution 19, Governor, Alaska Native Languages Emergency. This is the first hearing on the resolution. Would the resolution sponsor of HCR 19, Representative Ortiz, and his staffer, Jody Gatti, please come to the testifier table. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning, members of this committee and Chairman Parrish. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Representative Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jody Gatti, staff to Representative Ortiz.
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman, and again, thank you for the opportunity to put HCR 19 before this committee. Mr. Chairman, the state has moved in the right direction by acknowledging and recognizing the 20 Alaska Native languages as official languages of the state. However, recognition is just the first step. The intent of this resolution is to heed the suggestions put forth by the Alaska Native Language Preservation Advisory Council, or ANILPAC. The council and this resolution strongly urges the governor to issue an order, administrative order, recognizing the linguistic emergency that exists and state that it's the policy of the Alaska State of Alaska to actively promote the survival and continued use of all of Alaska's 20 native languages. In their 2018 biennial report to the governor and the legislature, ANILPAC warned that all 20 Alaska native languages are in crisis, and most are predicted to become extinct or dormant by the end of the 21st century. The state of Alaska can no longer sustain these rates of language loss unless policy changes are enacted that support people who are learning and speaking Alaskan native languages throughout the state. The loss of language represents the loss of a critical piece of our history, culture, and traditional way of life. I respectfully request the legislature join me in support of the ANILPAC and the languages that represent intergenerational knowledge. And for this committee's information, Mr. Chairman, we've recently lost the last fluent speaker of the EAC language in 2008. And then also the Upper Tanana language has one fluent speaker left, and that person is 93 years old. And so these two points are just to illustrate at what a critical juncture we are right now in the preservation of these important languages and these important critical aspects of our culture, Alaskan culture. You know, Alaskan culture all begins with the native people more than 10,000 years ago. And it's critical that we do what we can, Mr. Chairman, to try to enhance and preserve these languages for today, but for our future generations, more important. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we have a number of people who have come to testify on behalf of this resolution, and I want to make sure and afford them the opportunity to do that. But if there are any questions from members of the committee prior to that public testimony, I'd be glad to try to answer those questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
I do have questions. I want to allow people the chance to testify, so I'll hold my questions till afterwards.
Very well. Are there any questions for the bill's sponsor at this time? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity. And let's hear the testimony. And thank you to all the folks who have come here to testify on behalf of this resolution.
Thank you. Thank you. We will now open public testimony. Invited testimony. Let's start with Albert Ngeluk in Shishmaref.
Yes, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Chairman Parrish, and also to Representative Ortiz, and I fully support what Representative Ortiz said in his opening remarks. And I don't have a prepared testimony, but I'll try to keep it short as possible. And first of all, Ubla Lortak, which is good morning in my Inupiaq language here in Shishmaref. My name is Albert Ningaluk. I was born and raised here in Shishmaref. And Shishmaref Eskimo name is Tiyaktak. Inupiaq is my first language, and I'm representing myself and many elders in our state who are physically with us and those elders who have passed on before us. My testimony is from my mind and heart, and I'm respectfully directing my testimony to Governor Walker to declare a linguistic emergency to ensure survival of many Alaskan native dialects, as mentioned by Representative Dan Ortiz in his opening statements in regards to the House Concurrent Resolution 19. There are very few of us now who can speak our own respective languages, and I'm directing my testimony to Governor Walker, and I'm asking Governor Walker to respectfully urge you, Governor, to immediately issue your administrative order to recognize and save our respective dialects in our state. And please allow me to very quickly read a scriptural verse that I want to make sure that I include my testimonies from this Bible, and it's, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me." And in my dialect, it sounds like this. Like this, Umatisi Likutakine, Upiridluangayan, Upiridlungasuli Wanga. This is my testimony, but I strongly support and urge the legislative body to approve this House Concurrent Resolution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again, sir, for your testimony. At this time, we'll bring forward some invited testifiers. Annette Evans-Smith, would you please come forward, introduce yourself, or is she online? No, she's in the room. Oh, there you are. Hello. After Annette, we'll hear from Kone Lance Twitchell, Yayuk Bernadette Alvana Stimpf, and Elizabeth Madison Crow.
Is it okay if we switch
to order? Sure.
Okay.
And you can come forward two at a time as well if it's useful for moral support. Thank you for being here. If you'd please introduce yourselves and putting your name and affiliation on the record.
Okay.
And then begin your testimony.
Koyanak, Mr. Parrish. My name is Yayuk Bernadette Alvana Stimple. Wanga Ugivung Mugurunga Aglansak Nazomi Ituagurunga. I'm from Nome, Alaska, but my family's from King Island. And I'm affiliated with the Alaska Native Language Preservation Advisory Council since 2012. I'd like to strongly urge Governor Walker to do the administrative order for our linguistic crisis when colonization started for our native people in our state. I'll just do a brief history and then do a little demonstration of what we've done as a council. When it was formed in 2012, we began talking over the status of our native languages and the impact of language loss over the last 50 plus years. Our people were forced to forget their identity as native people, as native language speakers. There are many elders in my region, which is the Bering Strait region, that no longer spoke to their children. A critical time to acquire, to learn their languages while growing up. That's the best time for language learning. Children were sent off to boarding schools and their children weren't spoken to in their language any longer. Religion and education played a huge role in this native language loss. Over time, elders and young people were set apart linguistically. Young people didn't understand why they were disconnected from their elders. Native dancing protocols weren't learned, and other public functions, cultural values weren't shared any longer. Healing needs to happen from the past traumas of identity and language loss. I will conduct a short version of what NLPAC has done to begin this healing, and I'll have to ask, I'm sorry, my back is towards you. Native language speakers and that can understand the language, please stand up. Thank you. And for those people that can understand some or speak some of native language, please stand up. Thank you. And those that don't speak or understand any of the native languages, please stand up. We are very sorry for not speaking with you, and we didn't speak to you in our identity and language. We wanted you to do well in schools and at jobs when you grow up. We now know that was not right. That is the end of my testimony. Thank you.
Diana, Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish, for the record, my name is Annette Evans-Smith. Alaska Native Heritage Center, Ami Chaliunga. I currently sit as chair of the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council. I also work at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. It is important in understanding the status of Alaska Native languages to understand the historical context that explains how we've gotten to the place where we have gotten. If you look at the beautiful map that is on the screen in front of you, and for those of you who are in the room, you can see the Alaska Native Language map. For those of you who are on the phone, I'm looking at the latest version of the Indigenous Peoples Languages map, and it shows a very colorful version of the language map that describes the languages that are in Alaska. And as close as the colors are to one another are as close as the languages more or less are to one another. So that's the visual description of how this map works. And one of the things I like to explain to people is the history of how our languages are in the status and state that they are in. And so one has to go back in time a little bit. And to tell that story, I've brought in a smaller version of the map.
The map is in the last page of your packets.
And beginning in 1867, with the U.S. purchase of Alaska from Russia, without consulting the Unangan people, Russia signs a treaty with the United States. American administration begins on October 18th. The inhabitants are to be citizens. The uncivilized tribes will be subject to the laws and regulations as the United States may from time to time adopt. No Alaska Natives are granted citizenship. Sheldon Jackson, a Presbyterian missionary, convenes a meeting of Protestant Mission Society representatives in Pennsylvania to encourage and coordinate the establishment of mission stations around Alaska. Congress passes an Organic Act to provide civil government in Alaska. The act calls for the establishment of schools for Native and non-Native children. The Secretary of Interior appoints Sheldon Jackson as General Agent for Education in Alaska, a position Jackson holds until 1906. Native languages are disallowed from public schools, 1886. The U.S. Bureau of Education ends its practice of contracting with missionary groups in Alaska to operate day schools and opens federal day schools. A new number of new school buildings are constructed in Native villages. These federal schools continue on until about 1966. Congress passes the Nelson Act that, among other things, funds roads, education, and care for the mentally ill in Alaska. The legislation states the funds for education are for schools for white children and those of mixed race, mixed blood, who lead a civilized life. This results in a second school system. Alaska has the U.S. Bureau of Education, later the BIA, schools created by the Organic Act of 1884 that became known as Native schools and territorial, later state schools. This dual system operates until the 1980s. Three Native families in Sitka go to court seeking permission for their children to attend the territorial school in town. The judge determines in the case known as David versus Sitka School Board, the families do not lead a civilized life and hence does not permit the children to enroll in the territorial school. Thirteen Southeast Alaska Natives create the Alaska Native Brotherhood and gain recognition and the Alaska Native Sisterhood. So you can see the map can go back together. 1915. The territorial legislature passes a law, Chapter 24, Session Laws of Alaska, 1915, recognizing Native people as citizens, though the law requires a Native person to get endorsements from five white citizens. The law requires a Native person to get endorsements from five white citizens and to have severed all tribal relationships and to have adapted the habits of a civilized life. We have copies if you would like to see an example of one. This one goes back down. 1918. The pandemic flu epidemic spreads to Alaska and rages through 1919. Many Native children, particularly in the Seward Peninsula and in the interior, are orphaned. In my family, of a family of nine, three sisters survive. The territorial legislature passes a literacy act that requires a person to read and write English to vote in territorial elections. And then, of course, in 1945, we pass the anti-discrimination law. And you can see again, we can build our map back. And then in 1972, the legislature passes the Alaska Native and creates the Alaska Native Language Center. In 1990, Congress passes the Native American Languages Act, federally recognizing tribes for the first time and languages. Though at first unfunded, it federally recognizes languages. In 2012, the Alaska State Legislature created SB 130, body that is known as ANLPAC, or the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council. And then, of course, the recognition that officially recognizes the languages of Alaska as official languages of the state. And Alaska, I believe, is still one of only two states in the nation that has done so. So you can see pieces of the map can go back together with well-planned, well-implemented state policy. When we all work together, we can rebuild our map. There are many pieces that still need to be put back. But with all of us working together, we can do this. We have, with ANLPAC, come out on January 1st with our recommendations to the legislature, to our community members who are our partner, who are in our network. And in the final pages of this plan, there's a list of all of the immersion programs, all of the network of individuals that are functioning programs within this school, their schools, their community programs. They are doing this without state support largely right now. Imagine what they could do with support, with plans. Imagine the potential. And so that's what we're here to advocate for. We know that our Native children do better, perform better. They make better life choices. They do better in school. The reverse is also true. When they are conflicted about their culture and conflicted about their identity, the reverse is true. They are more drawn to those poorer choices. They're drawn to those other choices that we would rather they not be drawn to. There is research that demonstrates that. There is also research that shows that there are tremendous protective factors in health that are connected to language. And that's what the research that the council has been examining shows. Since 2012, we have been gathering testimony from members across the state of Alaska. And the recommendation that is in particular in the genesis of this resolution came from a member in this body, and I would like her to raise her hand and be recognized, because we do listen. We do listen to the people of Alaska as they make recommendations, and I want to make sure that this body is recognizing that. So, Boyana, thank you for this chance to testify, and I'd like to turn it over to the next member of our body who is here.
Before we do, we have a question for you from Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, that was an excellent presentation. Appreciate it very much. It was very, very moving. You did very well. The question that I have, though, you mentioned imagine with state support. What do you envision state support looks like?
Well, there are a number of policy recommendations that could be made that the Language Council makes within this report that have to do with planning around immersion, state policy around immersion within, say, the Department of Education. Right now, there's not a lot of support there. Support for the certificate program, for example. Right now, there is a bill within the legislature. I believe it's passed out of the House. Now it could go through the Senate. That further strengthens the certificate program for teachers. Place names. In addition to that, let me find a truth and reconciliation process for the state of Alaska. There is so much healing that does need to happen, so very similar to what Canada is going through right now. When you take and rip up the pieces like this, and when you do this to a people, it would be helpful to hear and to heal and to have a reconciliation, much like the process that Canada is going through. There is more research and data and assessment that it does need to happen, very critically does need to happen. We need to know exactly where our speakers are. We need to know how many new speakers are being created, how old our speakers are. Are they 94? Are they 4? How many new speakers are we generating in our villages? Data and assessment is a critical area. And support, like I said, place names is critical because it's support through normalization, making it visible. Alaska needs to be special, but it needs to be everywhere. It needs to be very visible. And we would like to see it as a required component as part of an Alaskan education.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Yes, through the chair, when you say you want to see it part of mandatory education in Alaska, could you expound on that?
Well, much like German, French, Russian, Japanese, Chinese are all taught in the Anchorage School District and other districts in this state, we would like our native languages taught in much the same way with much the same support.
Thank you.
Follow up, Representative Rauscher.
So through the chair, there is no elective for native language in public school? Interesting. Thank you.
Pardon?
I said interesting. Thank you.
Seeing no further questions from the members of the committee, thank you both for your testimony. I'll invite up next Hune Lance Twitchell.
Thank you. Kishish. Koneya Achsai. Good morning, honorable representatives of the state of Alaska. My name is Chone Lance Twitchell. I am an assistant professor of Alaska Native Languages at the University of Alaska Southeast, a doctoral candidate in Hawaiian and Indigenous Cultural and Language Revitalization at the Kahakaula Okeilikilani College of Hawaiian Language at the University of Hawaii at Hilo, and a council member of the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council. I will begin my testimony in my language and will translate. Khwasaku yedeshli atewe wasa atbuni ha'anika. Tahwasak hakat uwagut. Gayek ee at yetlingit anika kudziti at hayuk atangi. Tlaidehin het hastu tuwa oshku. Hasakawa ak owe kreka. Stakatwe anyatki yuk atangi. Yahas ayawse ini. Ishandain yu hakawashu wegao. Ishandain yu hakashaykh yesu. Wanakhsowe hecha ite wadushi. Chuwe yatle nakhayati we nanaten. Heche kwati. Ashut watua at yuhan. Yaakh de chankiyan. Hechasa gukhsaku wutletish hayuk atangi da. Yaha'ani dach kekwa'adi, hasasaka ach, wash ach wa'ach, ye'awe ach wa'chez yayagi. It is a heavy thing what happened on our ancestral land. It really came upon us. This wonderful thing that was born on our land, our language, at one time they did not want it. They tried, truly, to kill all the languages that belonged to the children of the lands of Alaska. How horribly we suffered at that time. How horribly we suffer today. Why was a hand not extended to us? It is as if we are alone with this great death. It will no longer be this way. We have reached the end of it. My grandchildren, they are not going to know lonesomeness for our language. Those who walk upon our land, let them hear it. Maybe they will understand. That is my wish today. My fellow council members shared tremendous information with you, and my goal is to hone our focus in on two things. The ways the horrors of yesterday affect us all, and the effectiveness of public policy. It is hard for us to hear, and I assure you the reason I share it is not to make anyone feel guilty, but this testimony must include the suffering of our elders and ancestors. This is a real thing and must not be transformed into a metaphor or minimized into tough choices or the ways that things had to be. These are life stories shared with me by three amazing elders, Nora Dauenhauer, Marge Detson, and Ida Kalmegan. And I give them my respect and honor today. There was a little school across from us near a place called Anachya Andaganye, which translates as where the sun rays first hit, and it is sometimes called Douglas Boat Harbor. This little school houses a Montessori program. Good things happen there. Good people are there. But we know it is a place that once housed great suffering and injustice. One of our elders who went to school there in the 1930s shared a story about having kerosene dumped on her head the first day of school because the teachers said they were dirty. Another talked about being lifted up by her hair and shaken as a delicate five-year-old child, lifted by her hair and shaken violently because she spoke the language of the people of this great land. A teacher who wrote a book in 1904 about his experiences said, "We required them to speak nothing but English except by permission, but they often would get into the washroom or in the woodshed, and having set a watch, they would indulge in a good Indian talk. A few cases of this kind, and we applied a heroic remedy to stop it. We obtained a bottle of myrrh and capsicum. Myrrh as bitter as gall and capsicum hot like fire. We prepared a little sponge, saturated it with the solution, and everyone that talked Indian had his mouth washed to take away the taint of the Indian language. An elder who has worked with me for a long time was hearing some of these stories as I was researching language shift and attempted genocide in the United States. She shared this with me. I was never beaten like that, but I had a teacher who used to call me over every time she saw me. She would tell me when I was a little girl, every day, "You people think you're going to be as good as us, but you're not. You're just a second-class citizen, and no matter how long you try, you will never be as good as us." We are a battered people. Alaska Native peoples are resilient and have survived tremendous hardships. We remain. We are still here, and we are telling you that it is time for massive change. The social debt is due, and it is time to shift the scales to one of more balance. The actions of the past affect us today by creating tremendous loss and suffering on all sides, and by entrenching us in a great lie that allows us to believe that languages can be ranked in terms of use, effectiveness, and need, often before we have ever learned anything about them. This is a health issue. The damage is physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual, cultural, and social. If language loss were a cancer, then we would be scrambling to do something. If our languages were panda bears, there would be protests and news stories around the world. I think what we have done in the past few years are positive steps, but we have really only said that we are going to do something, and we have not initiated enough changes in enough places to secure a strong future for our languages. Public policy can correct some of the horrific wrongs that occurred throughout Alaska. Federal employees, state employees, and religious leaders had their hands in the attempted killings of our languages, and those hands are unclean. It is time for some decisive steps that result in elevating our official indigenous languages to places of equity and opportunity. I ask you to challenge yourself to fight the urge to do what feels normal, and to sit in silence and listen to those who suffered. For every child who is hit over the hands with a ruler for speaking their language, we need a language nest that is state-sponsored and promoted as a program that we refuse to allow to fail. For every adult who is now challenged with their concept of identity and self-worth, we need a government that reaches out to them and understands that doing the right thing is neither liberal nor conservative, but is decisively human. Put money into this. Build programs that will endure. I have been in these halls pushing for a change that I hear when I listen to the old people. When we conclude our work and hand things over to the next generation, my hope is that we can tell them that we took an honest look at things and we did our best for them and their ancestors. Some of the proposed changes might make you nervous, but that fear is not based in fact or truth, only speculation that what happened and what is happening must be the right thing. We are a people of tremendous opportunity, and we are going to take it. Our council has inherited lifetimes of labor on this topic, and we are ready to present our recommendations for change. In the tomorrow I envision, we are all enriched by the languages of this land, as Shawodineki, self-respecting people, and Anyutki, children of the land. I've also summarized 5 points that were shared earlier. Support for immersion programs. The state needs to get behind immersion programs for children, which we call language nests in schools, and adults, adult immersion programs and master apprentice programs. These should be declared as officially state-sponsored activities that we collectively refuse to allow to fail, and we find ways to fund them and maintain them. We model them after successful programs in Hawaiian and Mohawk communities and develop templates for all of our languages by focusing on a few and trying to build those up strong while developing some ideas that we can replicate in other communities. I believe it's time for an official apology from the state of Alaska, admitting wrongdoing and condemning the development of racist hierarchies and activities. Within that is a commitment to repair what has been broken by sponsoring listening sessions throughout Alaska, developing an action plan with the understanding that monumental changes are needed in order to avoid committing genocide. A comprehensive state-sponsored survey of all the languages in Alaska, focusing on developing the capacity within each language to track the number of existing speakers and the new speakers that are being gained, with special celebrations for the addition of new speakers. Language normalization activities that involve restoring Alaska Native place names, making them official and making sure they are used, and placement of appropriate Alaska Native languages in public spaces. Lastly, I believe a requirement for high school graduation would put us in a place where we allow ourselves to elevate our languages to a place and show our children that it is a vital and valuable resource in Alaska. Mishish, ha'a, koyana, mahalo.
Are there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Drummond.
Thank you. I'm very moved by your testimony. I was born in New York City in a Greek-American family, and I didn't speak English till I went to kindergarten. And I totally appreciate being allowed to speak your native language. Have you examined, and I'm sure you have, the immersion language programs in the Yukon-Kuskokwim area that were established by the school districts there quite a number of years ago, and how successful they are in restoring language to those communities?
Yes, we work with members across the state, and that is one of the hallmark programs in Alaska as far as language retention. For Yupik, they've been able to hold on to so much of their language, and I believe we're seeing a generational shift, but I believe programs like that, and my hope is that programs like that get elevated to this place where the state says this is one of the best programs we have in the entire state of Alaska, mm-hmm. and that it's able to continue and build in its strength and become a model program across the state.
Follow up. But that's focusing on just the Yupik and the Chupik in that area, and there are 18 other languages in the state. Are there any other immersion programs that exist right now?
Yes, there are. Kodiak has a, and so really there's a language nest, which is mm-hmm. a preschool that operates entirely in the language, and then there's a language mm-hmm. school. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, there is one language school, which is in Yupik territory, and then there are several language nests. One recently opened in Kodiak, two recently opened in Fairbanks. One's been running for a long time in Kotzebue. One recently opened in Yakutat. One is in the process of opening here in Juneau in the fall. And so, one of my hopes is that these aren't just sort of isolated pockets, mm-hmm. but if they're trying to do at the core the same thing, and I think we could develop an Alaska Native Language School Board that helps those entities so that you have some mm-hmm. you have some unity, because what you're trying to do is similar to everybody else but much, much different. And so we also look at the Hawaiian model and also the Maori model quite a bit.
Thank you. That idea of an Alaska Native Language School Board is a wonderful idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. A.V. Albert, dissertation, Twitchell, congratulations for your educational attainment. I'm an old English major, and I've got a master's in English journalism, and always wanted to get into linguistics. I think language is a fascinating thing as it intersects with culture. It's just fascinating. If it were within the purview of this committee to change the history that was so eloquently stated and demonstrated before us, I think I can fairly say that we would do that. We can't do that. What we have before us as a legislative committee is a measure to act on. It's a resolution that asks the governor to issue an administrative order recognizing a linguistic emergency. It doesn't even ask us as a committee to declare a linguistic emergency. Have you approached the governor with a request that he declare a linguistic emergency?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have been in communication with the governor's office since this idea was floated by Sarah Dibdahl at the AFN listening session in October, and we've been in communication with the governor and lieutenant governor's offices, and we have also been talking at the legislative level here to see how can we make this happen. And so part of our testimony, which I believe might be the first time the Alaska Native Language Preservation Advisory Council has testified to a legislative body, was to sort of say this is important and these are the types of things that we are hoping to see in an administrative order.
Okay. Following up, When you asked the governor, did he say he wouldn't do it unless the legislature urged him to?
I have not heard that. Our hope is that it's going to move forward. Who's to say what will happen? But one of the ideas is that if we can get sort of a resounding, because if you look fundamentally, the resolution is saying, should the governor do this? Mm-hmm. And so if we just say yes, it's kind of a pretty straightforward thing. But one of the things that we really need when it comes to languages, especially with when we had the House Bill 216, which looked at making Alaska Native languages official languages, a lot of people were saying, well, this is just a symbolic act.
It's actually in the language of the resolution.
Yeah, and so one of the things that we looked at is we looked at it as we had testimony from a friend of mine who said, when I was a Vietnam veteran, his name is Paul Berg, and his testimony focused on being a Vietnam veteran, coming back. It was a fairly unpopular thing at that particular time. There was no real recognition of what they did, and they didn't choose to start that war or to go to that war. A lot of them were drafted. And then at some point there was a small ceremony to recognize them and what they had done. And that's what he talked about. And so sometimes when we say, well, it's just the process is going through, why should we do this? And that might be something that someone could consider. But the idea is that if we start getting unanimous voices saying, oh, my goodness, this is still happening, this is something that we cannot allow to happen, we'll do everything we can, then I think it adds to our momentum.
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
Again, the resolution before us asks the governor to issue an administrative order, and for the record, he can do that without us passing this. In fact, this governor has been known to do things without the support of or declaration of support from the legislature. In fact, sometimes he goes out of his way to do so. But I would be very much interested to find out if there's any conditions he placed on this. If he's suggested this as a tactic, the governor can do what he wants to. He can issue this AO if he wants to today, tomorrow. So let me ask you, let me turn, as an academic who's been involved in the study of language and culture across national and across state borders, can you expound for us a bit, what's the relationship between language and culture?
Yeah, so they are certainly intertied. And a person can have cultural fluency without language fluency, and a person could have language fluency without cultural fluency. For example, someone could know, if we took the example of the Tlingit, someone could know songs, they could know about Kuik, the potlatch, they could know about the clans and the migrations, and they could know a tremendous amount, hunting, fishing, all of this cultural knowledge that makes us Tlingit people, but they might not be speakers. Somebody could learn the Tlingit language entirely in a classroom that was somewhat disconnected from these cultural activities, and not understand that they could put the language together but couldn't understand some of the cultural depth of some of the things that they need to do with the language. And so one of the things that's important to realize is you can have a cultural revitalization quite a bit easier than you can have a language revitalization. I believe just American culture in a post-colonized world is not always friendly towards having multiple languages existing in the same space. However, you could bring the songs back, you can dance, and so you could come to a celebration here in early June. You could see thousands of dancers and dance groups, and they go all day, and it's wonderful, and there's so much energy. And so one thing in Hawaii that they talked about is they said, well, they saw the sort of difference between those two things, but then nobody could really talk. Mm-hmm. And so they tried to really use that to build momentum, to say, oh, yeah, well, you're doing hula, and in the hula, you're speaking some Hawaiian. And so now we'll just extend that because you shouldn't be doing hula without Hawaiian. And so these are some of the things that are important to realize, because if the languages do go, then those cultural ceremonies lose the things that they're rooted to. You end up sort of doing them without any real depth of understanding of why you do them. So there's specific words that connect to concepts and that connect you to ancestors and that connect you to each other.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's important to get out. With your indulgence, another line of questions.
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
Representative Drummond mentioned that she grew up in a non-English language household. I went to school with several kids who were Jewish, and they had to I got to go to Hebrew school, mm-hmm. and they learned how to speak the Hebrew language. I took French in high school, in elementary school. and that was helpful too. I'd like to think that government cannot block culture, and that a culture will survive and will thrive, or maybe just survive, in the face of government action. I'm also, therefore, on the converse side, concerned that government cannot support culture. So I'm going to ask you this question. Can government support of Alaska Native language, specifically language, be adequate to support the Alaska Native culture? Or is it part of the whole thing? And help me understand what the role of government is in this.
Yeah. So the role in government, and I would say government can and has limit cultural activities. And so when governance was handed over to missionaries following the comedy plan that was executed by Sheldon Jackson, it established missionaries as the governing bodies in a lot of villages in Alaska. You would have to go to these religious leaders and show them your cultural activities, and they would give you a thumbs up or thumbs down on whether you could do that or not. So they banished mass dancing, and they banished language speaking, and they banished the number of ceremonies you can have. And so these things were actively executed by the government, and we have lots of records documenting this, and it's pretty easy to connect the dots to the social ills that we're faced with today. You can't just squash people out and expect them to just bounce back. And so some of the things is trying to separate, which is always hard with indigenous peoples, is we're not really talking about race. We're talking about people and governments and languages, and it's really hard to tease those things out from each other, because sometimes we'll see some initiatives, and some of the pushback would be, why are these Alaska Natives getting special benefits? These aren't benefits for me. But when it comes to a language, anybody could come to the language. We have plenty of non-Tlingit people who come and learn our language, and it enriches their lives, and it opens doors, and it connects them to the land. And so these are things is to make sure that we're really focused on, because there is a cultural component, but culture is really just groups of people and what they decide to do. And so the culture and the language are completely related, but this is not a bill these are not initiatives trying to say we want to make sure the cultures are intact necessarily. We're focused on the languages with the belief that the language has a health impact, and part of that health impact is culture, because when people don't have this thing. Kajakti, one of our beloved elders, Walter Soboloff, said, people who know who they are don't kill themselves. Mm-hmm. And so when you take that root out from them, then they tend to just drift. And this is something I believe you see throughout places where indigenous people have been colonized in ways that remove their language from them and that force them to live a life where they don't have a choice. And that those are government actions. And then what we see is a resulting total displacement of people and identity and land. And then a lot of folks might say, gee, what's wrong with these people? But never, because we kind of bury the history, that the history that was given today, I think, is something that the majority of our students who are graduating high school or college rarely encounter. Because they don't encounter it, it seems like Alaska Native languages just kind of drift away for no specific reason, but there were specific reasons. And so part of the initiatives now is saying, okay, these were government-sponsored activities. We need government-sponsored activities to sort of, not necessarily right the wrongs, but to try and sort of look at how do we put these into our day-to-day operations, which is important because I think people are enriched when they learn the language of the place that they are. If we all just moved to Greece or to France and we decided to never learn that language, it would just be strange. But it's acceptable here in America.
Thank you. Two more. I'll go.
Representative Drummond.
We could talk about this all day, and I would just absolutely love it. I just want to point out that you've all seen the map that overlays Alaska over the lower 48. You know, our state stretches from one end of the country to the other and north to south. Greece is a very small country. It's the size of the state of New York, where I grew up. There are about 7 or 8 million Greeks in Greece. There are millions more around the world. There are 600 Greek Orthodox churches in North America alone. Every one of them has a Greek festival in which they celebrate their language, their culture, their music, their food annually. Alaska Natives there aren't that many Alaska Natives left on the land. You know, it's a few hundred thousand at the most, and for that reason, I'm very concerned and very supportive of the need in terms of calling this an emergency. Greeks have been around for thousands of years. I just read that the Greek language and the Chinese language are the two that have come down through through generations virtually untouched, unchanged. The Greek will be around for a long time. But you have a very important mission here, and I absolutely want to support it because the numbers call for us to do this, because you can't do it by yourselves, and you need to be supported. And any way I can help, as chair of House Education, I will look to forming an Alaska Native School Board. Let's talk some more about that.
Thank you. Just to add to that, Chairman Parrish, is if you look at the number of Alaska Native people, our research leads us to firmly believe that fewer than 10% of those Alaska Natives can speak an Alaska Native language. Mm-hmm. And so it's dreadful right now.
I know that Representative Sadler has a question. Are there any other members of the committee at this time? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say that based on the testimony you've heard and just the record, that it's probably a lot easier for government and the mechanisms of government to interfere with the culture. It's easier to break things up than it is to have the mechanisms of government support culture. You touched on this a little bit. I want to bring it out. Would it help resolve the linguistic emergency to have non-native Alaskans, ethnic Germans, French, Chinese, to learn to speak Alaska Native languages? Or is it important that Alaskan Natives speak Alaskan Native languages in order to resolve what's being called a linguistic emergency?
Thank you. I believe both things are important. And so we have to look at those. For the indigenous populations, it's a key component of who they are. I believe it's a big missing element in terms of the health crisis that accompanies the linguistic crisis. For non-indigenous people, I think it's important because one, it helps you to understand a lot more of a particular place. If you could walk around this community and know that we're standing on a place called Zanti, and then there's a river down there called Zantikihini, and there's a school over there called Zantikihini, and when these things start to have meaning to you, you connect to a place in a different way than in a world that is only colonized. And I do think it's important for people in Alaska to understand that they're part of the colonial process. They either extend that colonial process, and the colonial process, unfortunately for us, was one that went from negotiation to removal to elimination. First, the elimination was through warfare, and the second elimination was through forced assimilation. So you either become complicit in that, or you say, okay, that's a bad idea, and we don't need to feel bad about what happened in the past. We just need to do better now. And so I think it's important that everybody achieves some basic level of proficiency, and I think it enriches their experience in wherever they live in Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two more points, I'll let go. You have prepared for this hearing today with some trepidation, because this resolution on its face and the language, as I say, is a simple resolution asking this committee, or asking the legislature to ask the governor, never a branch of government, to do something. That's, you can cut the corner, go straight to the governor. You don't need us. But I know there's an awful lot of emotion, pain, hurt, pride, grievance, and loss. This is a very highly fraught issue. And it puts us in this committee and this legislature on the spot. And I just want to caution that the people don't look at this as you're either for us or against us. I was going to ask the question, is it possible? And I do, I'm a supporter of Alaska language and Alaska Native culture, and of lots of different cultures. I really am. But I've got to look at this specific resolution in front of me. I was going to ask the question, and it's almost unanswerable, is it possible to be supportive of Alaskan Natives and Alaskan Native culture and people and not support this resolution? Because this asks us to get government involved in trying to repair the work that government caused to a large extent in the past. And that's a very difficult thing to put the puzzle back together that was torn asunder. I respect that. A very powerful metaphor. And I appreciate her doing that. I don't know to what extent a culture that relies exclusively, I mean, exclusively on government to support it is in the best place. I think it can help. I think it can augment. It can make it possible. It can try to restore the natural, organic support of a language that a culture provides. So I guess the question I want to get to after all that is, what is the end state? We heard earlier on this is the next step. Representative Christ-Tompkins' bill declaring 20 Alaska Native languages symbolically as official languages is a step. The creation of the language Alaska Native Language Preservation Council is a step. What is the destination? What is the end goal? When will the linguistic emergency be either moderated or concluded, resolved?
Well, I believe, and I don't know if we ever get to a safe place, if there's 20 Alaska Native languages, I believe that over 12 of them have fewer than 100 speakers left. I believe that there's 4 or 5 of them that probably have fewer than 10 speakers left. And so it's hard. You know, we had some folks who've voted against some of these initiatives, and it's very hard to stand up and to say, after hearing everything, including listening to your elders and listening to what happened to your ancestors and listening to what the United States and the Alaskan government and the education system have done, I vote no. And so for me, those no votes are pretty heavy. They're pretty heavy, and a lot of times some of the justification for that is, well, it's just not the responsibility of the government. And so these are some statements that I think are worth examining, because the other thing that we try to do with a lot of this is say, you know, English and European-based American culture is not the only thing that exists here, but it's often considered the default. That's the default. That's what we study. If I look at that map, I see 20 Alaska Native languages, and I just grab some high school students out of any given high school. I say, okay, let me give you a blank map. Put those 20 languages down on that map. I don't know how many of them could do that. But then they could name 20 states, and they could name 20 countries, and they could name 20 presidents. And so what we end up doing is we say, those people aren't really important. And so one of the things that we have to continually realize is that we live in a system that has developed these hierarchies already. All we have to do is do what feels normal, and those hierarchies continue, because those hierarchies have set up systems of privilege and of suffering. And so the suffering that happens is probably invisible to a lot of people who end up in positions of power. But one of the things that we can do is we could say, okay, what we're trying to do is change the experience of what it means to be an Alaskan, to what it means to be educated. For a long time, people would say, your languages aren't of any value. But that's before they ever learned anything about them. And so we're trying to say, don't make uneducated and uninformed decisions, but make informed decisions, and realize that some of these shifts, you know, it's hard for me to find the negative. I'm open to hear what the other side might be in terms of why this might be a particularly bad idea, because a lot of people consider it perhaps privileging Alaska Native people. But I think that's hardly the case. The case is really saying we have a system that blatantly privileges non-Indigenous people by making them the default, the standard, the standardized knowledge that you have to acquire. But we say, okay, a portion of that can be Indigenous people too, because they're here, they've been here, they're going to be here.
Thank you, sir. And a final statement, and I'll stop, I promise. I do appreciate the indulgence of the chair and the committee and the members here. I wanted to raise some of these issues because this is an important issue, and I take it very seriously. I'm not flippantly embracing or denying anything. This is important to me, and obviously it's important to a lot of people in Alaska, a lot of Alaskan Natives. Regardless of what this committee or this legislature or regardless of what the government does, I see these young girls and boys out there. The battle for the language and the culture will be won at that level. With those young kids learning how to speak the languages and passing it on to their children, that's the strength of a culture, and that's the strength of language. I really wish the best of success, and it can't be stopped if the young kids learn it. Thank you for the dialogue, and thank you for bringing this issue to us.
Chief.
Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gunas Chief.
I have one question, partly inspired by Representative Sadler's line of questions, and sort of thinking about this relationship of the role that government plays, I mean, both that it has played in sort of a sort of cultural sort of extirpating influence in Alaska, I mean, literally with the Yak language, for instance, and some of the history that you and Annette described, but also the role that government can play in a positive way, a force for good. And as someone actively involved in a public sector institution, the University of Alaska, I was wondering if you could speak to the relationship between these programs and funding that comes from the state of Alaska or other public sector entities, including school boards, school districts, and the kind of organic activity that you see in the community or in the Alaska Native community, people learning languages in their own homes, studying at night, Facebook groups, weekly language meetings at the library, that kind of thing, and how the two interrelate and how one potentially feeds into the other. In other words, I guess I'm trying to get at, I mean, Representative Sadler, I think you're, you know, rightly getting at the point that, you know, just through a law you can't change things, but I'm trying to get at, from your perspective, how investment and support from the public sector can sort of be a tide that rises a lot of boats, including boats that aren't at all affiliated with government. Can you speak to that?
Sure. I guess I'll have to start with a brief story so I can kind of share the vision. I was in my last semester in Hawaii. We're in a cohort, and it's a real small cohort, and one of the members of my cohort is probably, he's old enough to be my father, and his name is Kiope. And Kiope, he said, Kone, you want to go see the Ahapunanaleo graduation? So these kids are graduating from a preschool, going across the street to the kindergarten, right? I was like, yeah, that sounds wonderful. And so I go. It was a bigger thing than I thought. There was hundreds of people, a big tent. I thought, oh, wow, this is a big thing. They had a band. And then all the kids come out in their uniforms. And then the teacher starts by giving a speech. And they had taught us some Hawaiian, so I understand a tiny bit. But, you know, and so I'm trying to follow what's going on. And the teacher is speaking, and then she starts to cry. And I thought, oh, my, I'm going to get emotional here. And then I look over, and I see a line of about 30 people. And what that line of 30 people is parents with their little kids. And what's about to happen is those little kids are going to go up, and they're going to give a speech totally in Hawaiian. And then the parents are going to respond in Hawaiian. And that's really, that's the process of their graduation. And my colleague, he comes up to me, and he says, Hone. And I look at him, and he's just got tears coming down his face. And then he wanted to tell me something, but all he could muster was, intergenerational transmission. And then he walked away just crying, just crying. So I thought, I need, like, boxes and boxes of tissues, because here we go. You know. And I watched these kids, and I watched them, and some of these kids are crying. But we didn't feel the weight. We didn't feel the weight of the impending death of everything. We just saw these kids. And when he came over, when Kiope came over to me later, he said, I'm really sorry. He said, I didn't mean to just cry in your face like that. He said, I looked over. I've been doing this for a long time, he said. I looked over. I saw this line of 30 people with their kids. And those parents were my babies when I started teaching. And I thought, how can we get that? How can we achieve that? And so I think there's a lot of momentum right now that's going in the right direction. There's a lot of people who've been fighting their whole lives who might have a chance to see this. I always thought I wanted to open the door to that language immersion school before some of these elders were gone. And we're missing the boat. I've tried to work with the local school district. I've tried to work with the superintendent. I've tried to work with folks and say, let's build a program that just functions only in Tlingit. I said, do you support this? And they just can't say yes. So I think an Alaska Native Language School Board would be a step in that direction, because we could say, okay, we're not worried about what other people are doing. There's these small groups, and it's not going to be a big group. Maybe someday it'll be a big group. But you know, Alaska has the lowest graduation rates. Among Alaska Natives, it's horrible. And so I can't for the life of me understand why we're not doing something different. But it just comes back to me asking, am I important? Are we as a people important? Can that happen, that we feel the sense of being important? And so they had similar rates in Hawaii. They were down to maybe 100 speakers, maybe two. Now they have over 10,000. They said, we don't even know. They said, I remember that moment when I didn't know every single person that spoke Hawaiian. That's what the moment I want to achieve. And so one of the things that they have done is they had the state sponsorship. And part of that sponsorship is saying, okay, there's a funding formula for schools, so we're gonna form these Alaska Native language schools. And that means instead of that money going to a school here, we form a language school. It's a small group, and we're going to give them the power and see if this whole thing works, because it worked in Hawaii. They went from the types of graduation rates that we have with the Alaska Native people, with a failing education system, and now they have a 20-year history of a 100% graduation rate and an 80% college placement rate. A lot of things that I hear in the pushback is, well, you're going to just raise these kids in Tlingit. How are you going to get them ready for the real world? And I say, well, we're real. How are you going to get them ready for the modern world? I said, we're modern. I got an iPhone in my pocket, and I speak Tlingit. So what? And so, but these are the things that we have to deconstruct, is we're going to feel these things. And we'll say, well, you know, as my sister Liz Medicine Crow said, don't play devil's advocate. Don't blame the devil. Just own your actions. Where are these thoughts coming from? How can you diagnose them? How can you analyze them in the context of these greater things? Because we stand upon this platform that was built for us, and that platform unfortunately says these guys are better, these guys are worse, these are inferior. There are laws in the Supreme Court still that say indigenous people are inferior. And we've never rescinded those laws. That's amazing to me. But we can make laws that say, okay, what we're trying to do right now is just focus on these languages and realize that we have some keys in our pocket. We can open some doors.
Anashish, are there any further questions from members of the committee? Seeing none.
Chish.
I'd like to call Martin Stepitin next. I believe I'm jumping ahead a member of public testimony for obvious reasons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
If your children would like to testify as well, all they have to do is put their name and affiliation on the record.
Yeah. I might want to say something. Well, I've testified here. A few times on a number of issues, especially the most recent financial issues, and I testify at the city council chambers and a bunch of important stuff I think is important to me, my people, the future. But I think out of all the things I've ever testified on, I think this is the most important one.
Before you go too far in, would you please put your name and any affiliation on the record, just for...
Yeah. My name is Martin Stepitin. I live here in Juneau. I'm from St. Paul Island, Alaska. Kai wants to play with his keyboard. I just want to say that I think this is very near and dear to my heart, and this is very important. I appreciate your questioning, all of your guys' questioning, because trying to understand this isn't easy. Trying to think about a good resolution to make it work, to make to something an actionable thing that you can work on. Your questioning and your trying to understand this is important, because you're the ones that are actually going to help do something about it. So don't be afraid to ask questions and ask how you can help in this situation. This resolution it's a cry for help. I don't think it says that the legislature, we're not asking for the legislature's help. I think we are asking for the legislature's help too, not just the governor. The governor can certainly help, but I think the legislature, if it was to help or do anything, it would be have a lot more meaning and a lot more understanding throughout all the districts of Alaska. So I just want to say I'm Aleut, you know, and my kids are my wife is Tlingit. My wife is Ann Stepton. Her real name is Ann Jim. She's from Angoon, Alaska. So my kids, if you look at their BIA cards, it'll say they're half Tlingit and 15/16th, or they're half Aleut, and they'll say like 15/16th Tlingit, because she's also part Japanese from her great grandfather who moved over here from Japan. And so that's what their BIA cards say. And one of the main reasons we still live here is because the Tlingit culture is a lot stronger than the Aleut culture. The Tlingit culture has been more resilient through colonization and has survived a more. It's more intact than the Aleut language. Sorry to say that. That's the truth. That's just how it is. Mm. There's more Tlingit speakers than there are Aleut speakers. So. It's sad. I want to move home, but I want my kids to be close to one of their cultures, and I think I probably won't move home because of that, because the Tlingit language is so strong and the culture is so strong, and they love Tlingit dancing. They love they're learning some Tlingit at schools. I just got them signed up for the TCLL program, and we had to sign up really fast because there was only 12 positions open, and there was already 3 filled. So we got told by one of my friends, and so hopefully my kids get into that program and they can really start learning the language. So my kids are native children, and I want them. This is important to me. I want them to learn their language. I guess trying to think of what the legislature could do. I guess you said it's not one of the electives that you said. It's not an elective. I guess if we can somehow get that into law somehow, that it's an elective that our, you know, the children come out of graduate at school have to learn some form of indigenous language. Those simple resolutions such as that, you folks up here in this building could make that happen. So try to simplify this problem as much as possible to get something out to help, and like I said, don't be afraid to ask questions, such as Lance Twitchell and many other folks in here. I just wanted to testify on my point of view and what I thought, and I don't have a lot of great education like some of these folks, but this is near and dear to my heart. My children are here with me, so thanks for letting me have the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again. I'd like to invite Liz Medicine Crew up next. If you would please place your name and any affiliation on the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Liz Medicine Crow. I'm Tlingit and Haida. I'm from Kikwan. I'm from Cake here in Southeast, and I work for First Alaskans Institute. Our office is in Anchorage, but we serve our peoples of Alaska statewide. I'm happy to be here. Gunashchish Hawa to the sponsor for inviting me to share a few thoughts with you. Kadala'is, good people. Nun kwaigad gitkianans hinu dinan kiagen. Nun kwaigad gitkianans was my grandmother. Her name was Mona Jackson. She was from Haida Gwaii and married my grandfather. Gana haik hinu di chan kiagen. Gana haik was my grandfather, Tommy Jackson Sr. He was from Kiech. He was from Cake. Hath lagadagan, he was Tlingit. Sothkawas Hinu di Aukiang. Sothkawas is my mother, Delachini. She's a weaver. She's a language learner. She's a language teacher to me as her daughter. She's also here right behind me. I know we don't look anything alike, huh? Bilchini Hinu di Kut Kiang. Bilchini's my father. He lives in Cake. His family is originally from Montana and North Dakota, and he came up here after he served in the army. Lagunai Hinu di Kut Kil Dikyong. Lagunai is my Haida name. Gatsakas du Gustu Dikwalagan. I am eagle. Chichkitne Hinu di Ijong. I am a Chichkitne woman. And our crest is the hummingbird. So that's who I am, for the record. There's a few things that I was thinking about as I listened to the incredible testimony of those who came before me. And quite honestly, it's kind of intimidating to listen to our language experts, our teachers, our mentors, Yayuk, Annette, Kune. These are the people I look to, and the state looks to, by putting them in that position to be the experts. And when they say that we need to do this, these are the people that we have decided we should listen to, and what they said and how they said it. It makes me feel proud to listen to the love and the dedication to something that is so big, many cannot even imagine how we start to deal with this. We use an analogy all the time, right? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Well, that analogy doesn't quite work here in Alaska. We have whales. How do we eat a whale? I've had the opportunity to go to Utqiagvik to participate in Alakatuk, where they distribute the whale. It is not one bite at a time. It is by community. It is by a collective responsibility to the land and to one another. And as I was listening to them testify, and I was listening to Martin with his children to bring them here, how intimidating it could be. But he said to you, don't be afraid to ask questions. That, to me, is the strength of what we as a state can draw upon to make this place what we know it can and should be. Hune talked about resiliency. He talked about the linkage between knowing our languages, graduating from high school, knowing our languages and being healthy, knowing our languages and knowing how to make right choices, as did Annette. These things are important and critical linkages, and I was trying to think about how did that show up in my life, that I would be so blessed to be able to be here and spend time and to stand up and speak for my ancestors. When my grandmother graduated from Sheldon Jackson, and you heard some of the legacy of Sheldon Jackson earlier this morning, it was in 1935. She was sent to North Carolina to a teacher's college. It was called Asheville Normal Teachers College. She traveled there as a young Haida woman by herself, on a steamship from Ketchikan to Seattle, and then by train from Seattle to Chicago, having to navigate the Chicago train depot and get on another train to Asheville, North Carolina. This was in 1935. And when she got there, she had to stay there for 4 years until she graduated in 1939 with a Bachelor's of Science in Education. Maybe she might be the first Haida woman with that degree. My grandmother was a fluent Haida speaker. She was able to be there for 4 years without being able to come home for Thanksgiving break, without being able to come home for Christmas break, without being able to come home for spring break, without being able to come home for summer. How many of you have children who have gone to college? I did. If I couldn't come home for Thanksgiving, my heart broke, you know. Mm-hmm. And yet she was strong enough to be there and to persevere and to do well. And one of the stories that she told us about how she was able to do that, when she would feel homesick and lonesome, she would speak Haida to her mother in her head. That's what helped her stay strong, to get through what, for me, I would have given up on. I wouldn't have been strong enough to do that, but she did it. So when I was thinking about those points that our language experts shared, I thought about her perseverance and her resiliency and how that is a gift that was passed on to me. And now here I am, an adult language learner, and it is very difficult. And there are many things that we could do to make that more accessible and overcome these barriers. One of the things that I wanted to really key in on was one of the opportunities that was shared that this body could be a part of. This House resolution is calling upon this body to take a stand. This body. That's why it's here. You have the opportunity to make a decision on it, to show your support, to stand alongside the governor and all of the people here testifying in support of this resolution, to say that though that was a history of Alaska, the only way that we can correct that is by taking proactive, well-thought action. That's how we correct the past, is by making the right decisions today. When you come alongside other people in an endeavor such as this, when you have the legislature and the governor and the Alaska Native community and all the other people of Alaska who care about this, and I know I've heard many of you state already and have shown already that you are people who care about this, we show Alaska's unity to prevent a human rights catastrophe. That's what we're facing, and that's what I heard the members of the Alaska Native Language and Preservation Council say. And if that present and emergency situation isn't addressed, we are on the verge of losing the essence of our humanity and the soul of what Alaska can and should be. These things are not small. Government, church, and business worked together to get us where we are today. When it comes to Alaska Native people and our languages, the corrective action, the way to heal that history is to make new history. And in using the language of so many before me, to be on the right side of history. When I think about what an administrative order could do, when I think about the support of the legislature and the governor being side by side, I think about that preparation and that prevention and what that will look like. A solution that was put forward was truth and reconciliation. In our work at First Alaska's Institute, we are involved in a truth, racial healing, and transformation endeavor, which is a truth and reconciliation 2.0, because it has healing at the center. It is not about a one-time moment of listening. It is about setting in motion transformation. What that means is not change. We can be driving a vehicle, get a flat tire, change that tire, we still have the same vehicle. It's not just about shuffling a name and changing a name. What we're talking about when we talk about transformation, about how we've approached addressing this language crisis, is that butterfly began as a caterpillar. In that transformation, that butterfly can never go back to being a caterpillar. And what we're talking about in terms of the support of this body and the support of the governor and the support of Alaska Native people and this whole state is that transformation. We cannot go back and tell our ancestors and those who made choices about what they thought was best at the time. We cannot go back and change that. But what we can do is be part of writing that this moment forward. And to me, when I read that administrative, that call for an administrative support and the action of this body showing its support of it as well, that is what I knew was possible. And in that truth, racial healing, and transformation endeavor, we look to the opportunity to partner with the legislature to be able to serve our community by giving them a place to heal. A question earlier was around, is this just an Alaska Native Languages opportunity, or is this an opportunity for all Alaskans to know Alaska Native Languages? And the answer was both. The difference is that it requires so much more healing as an Indigenous person, so we have to create a network to support that. What I mean by that is, even in my own journey of learning my languages, every time I would try to speak my language, when I would get up to introduce myself, I would go blank and English would come out. And I had to do an immersion program with some of my sisters at home to break down that barrier inside my own mind to be able to actually push myself through, to start healing that hurt. And I also participated in the canoe journey where we paddled for 8 days from my village and really started to help push myself to that point where I could do that. And when I hear our experts talking about what needs to happen and coming forward and saying these are our recommendations, I look to them and I say, these are recommendations that I can get behind, because I know that they know what they are talking about and I have experienced what they are talking about. So on behalf of First Alaskans Institute, I'm here to say that we support this resolution, and we urge and hope each and every one of you will as well.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Medicine Crow, this resolution says nothing about creating a truth or reconciliation body or process. This speaks specifically to the legislature on the second page, encouraging the governor to work with the legislature to do two things: to ensure the survival, to work to ensure the survival of 20 Native Alaska languages, and to establish policies that prioritize survival and continued use. This may be part of what you see as part of that larger process, but this resolution says nothing about truth and reconciliation. So I want to make sure. Here's the difficult part for us. There's a lot of association brought with this. We are bound by the black letter law of what's in the resolution to vote yes, no, amend, whatever, on specifically what this says. And so I want to make sure that this, you may see this as part of a truth and reconciliation process. And if that's your specific goal, I would encourage you to bring forward specific legislation to accomplish that. But this specifically deals with language. So I just want to caution you.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Please. Of course, Ms. Medicine Crow.
Yes, I agree. It doesn't say that. And I think that that's really a response to what I hear are Alaska Native Languages mm-hmm. Preservation and Advisory Council mm-hmm. recommending. It was brought up previously. Mm-hmm. So to note that there are efforts and an endeavor underway to create a place that allows for the advancement of this healing that is necessarily a part of moving forward.
Mm-hmm. We are in agreement. Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps this is good fodder for the standing committee to produce a committee resolution, or the education committee to create such legislation or resolution along these lines, as Representative Sadler points out and mm-hmm. as Ms. Medicine Crow suggests.
Just excellent suggestion. Now, we do have 11 people left to testify. We also have someone online for questions, and we have about 20 minutes to accomplish it in. So if there are no further questions from the members of the committee, thank you. I'd like to invite, we have Michael Krause, UAF Professor Emeritus, on the line for any questions, if there are any questions for him. Seeing none, I'll invite forward Nancy Barnes. Ms. Barnes, if you'd please place your name and any affiliation on the record and give your testimony.
Okay. Mine will be brief. Nancy Barnes Dewayu Lekshki Deptegu Simshian Ada Alutiknu Juno Dawazagu Waleu Shamalgek. My name is Nancy Barnes, and I'm of the Eagle Moiety. I am Simshian and Alutik, and I am a lifetime Shamalgek learner, the language of the Simshian, which is a language isolate. I live in Juneau, and I'm just here representing the Juneau Shamalgek Learners Group. We wanted to give our support for HCR 19. We are indeed at a critical point in our Alaska Indigenous languages. I'd like to speak to you in particular about the Shamalgek language. We started a Simshian talking circle, I think, in 2002 or 3. A group of us would gather at my home using a talking dictionary and other material that whatever we could find. Our teacher, Donna Mae Roberts, and her late husband, Tony Roberts, would join us. Donna Mae came to Juneau in 2002, and she taught a week-long TPR class, or Total Physical Response. She told us a story that her grandmother, Mrs. Fawcett, told her in Metlakatla. She said there is a word in our language called Mahakala. That's the severest of all winter storms. The Mahakala only comes every 100 or 200 years or so. And no matter how much you prepare for that kind of winter, sometime it's not enough. At the end, she came close to us and in a whisper said, "I challenge you. Our language is in a state of Mahakala now." At that time, we had 30 fluent speakers. We have 6 on the United States side. Mm. Today, there are amazing efforts by the Hike Foundation in Metlakatla, Donna Mae Roberts also in Metlakatla, Terry Burr in Ketchikan, Marcella Asisic up in Anchorage, and Mike Yeldangeli helps us from British Columbia now. For over 2 years, we practice our language every Saturday at the Edward K. Thomas Building. Our Shamalgek teacher, Terry Burr from Ketchikan, now is teaching us formally online with an elder, John Reese, who's, I believe, 92 years old and helps us through Google Hangout. So we're using the technology. President Richard Peterson from Central Council Tlingit and Haida Tribes has been one of our champions, allowing us to use his room and technology so we can hook up from many areas. He knows that native languages are in a state of Mahakala. Alfie Price, who works for Central Council, has done a wonderful job making sure we have materials and logistics to keep us motivated and going. I respectfully ask for your support of House Concurrent Resolution Number 19, which urges our elected officials to work together with our Native organizations to initiate and strengthen, as appropriate, legislative and policy measures that prioritize the survival and continued use of Alaska Native languages. If anything, it'll give us a good statement to continue on. All the languages in Alaska, there's some of us, like I said, that gather on our own, and we just need the tools and support. And I urge your approval of this resolution. Doig Newsom. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Barnes, you've worked in this building for a number of years, haven't you?
26 years, 27.
And who'd you work for?
I worked for three governors in rural and native affairs in Cooper, Hickel, Knowles, and then I worked for Representative Kukesh, Senator Kukesh, and for Representative Christ Tompkins.
Okay. Then through the chair, on page 2 of this, on line 19, it calls on us to initiate and strengthen as appropriate legislative and policy measures that prioritize the survival and continued use of Alaska Native languages. To your mind, as a both a native language speaker and learner and a legislative and gubernatorial staffer, what does it mean to prioritize the survival and continued use of languages? Is it prioritize over what, other languages, other programs, other issues? What does prioritize mean?
To me, it means to, like, prioritize. Well, our languages are in danger, but to prioritize, like, language material and making it appropriate and having language nests, you know, through the school districts and through our tribal organizations and through the legislature. I don't know, you know, a lot of it we do on our own, but we need the support of, you know, for the legislature and government in general to recognize that there is, that we are in the state of Mahakala.
Right. But the word prioritize implies to put one thing above another, mm-hmm. or some things above other things. Mm-hmm. What should continued use of Alaska Native languages, priority over what? It's easier for a politician to say this is a priority, and what they mean is it's important, and what people hear is it's their top issue, their top priority. Mm-hmm. But to prioritize this, what are you prioritizing it over others? Is there anything else above it in importance?
I just think that because our languages are in danger, that it's just a priority, not, you know, that one thing is, if the language goes, the culture and a lot of other things go as well. I don't see it as, I just see it as critical, you know, that we have to, I liked what Mr. Professor Twitchell said in what happened in Hawaii and some of the other places where there was very few speakers, and then you've got school children, little kids speaking the language.
Right.
So I just see it as a priority for the, once our language goes, I'm also president of EAC Corporation. There's no EAC speakers left.
Mm-hmm. So to that
follow
mind,
up, Representative Sadler?
To prioritize does not just simply mean to hold something as important. Mm-hmm. It means that it is more important than mm-hmm. something else. So if you're not comfortable with the word prioritize, perhaps it shouldn't be included in this resolution.
Yeah, to bring it up to the level as important with everything else, just as important as everything else.
So it wouldn't be priority as much as equalize or put on the same level of, instead of higher than, is that correct?
Probably do some wordsmithing on that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Are there any further questions for Ms. Barnes? Seeing none, Doeksen.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll next have Don Bremner, followed by Della Cheney.
Good morning, members of the committee, sponsor of the legislation. My name is Don Bremner. I'm born and raised in Yakutat, Alaska. I'm the elephant in the room. I'm the child of parents who were prevented from speaking our language and practicing our culture in schools and in the public. So I thank you for this. I think it's a step in the right direction. I believe Governor Walker's going to support this. But there's some facts that pertain to me particularly as the elephant of the room of why I'm even here today. And if you look at our history, the English language from the beginning was, it's just a malignant tumor in my mind, my body, my spirit. It affected my thing of spirituality. Try to visualize that in your own personal life. The brunt force of English in my life, it's the tip of the spear that was used to compel my ancestor citizenship. That filtered down to me in how I related to the world. So compelling my ancestors, myself, and my future grandchildren to speak English has always been so evil intention in this state, in this country. And compelling the use of English, it was just a mean, cruel, hurtful experience in my parents' life, in my life. So Being the elephant in the room, I listened to the younger people that spoke before me. They're more cooperative. They're speaking cooperatively to you. With my parents' generation, my generation, we grew up fighting you, the state and the federal government, for everything we have to be natives. We set the base for them to speak here, like they're speaking. But we fought for this. So now we're getting crumbs pushed off our table, where before we had huge, massive feasts with our languages, culture. So now at issue, as it's been throughout the ages, is the total extinction of our native languages. And we could model the death of these languages with simple math, using the 1910 census. That's 108 years ago. In 1910, if you didn't speak English, you were considered illiterate. How do you deal with that? How do you live with that? How do you wake up in the morning in your own country and go out there and be illiterate? In 1910, there were estimated a total of 25 natives in Alaska. And of that 25,000, 56.6% of our people spoke just their native language. Just 43 years earlier, in 1867, all natives spoke the languages. 43 years. That's not a long time to lose that much language. In 1910, there were 307 Tlingits living in Yakutat. If you use that 56.6%, 174 people of my ancestors spoke our language. Well, today, there's about 211 Tlingit living in Yakutat, and we have only one elder, fluent speaker, left that's of age and healthy enough to even help teach this language. And that, using percentages, is 0.004739336.4% as compared to 56.6% in 1910. So we could play with the numbers and crunch them out and say, hey, okay, we get this. But what can we do? What positive steps can we take in the right direction? Well, this is a positive step. You're throwing the lifeline to our people, to these younger people that spoke before me. For myself, I already fought you to be here as a native person. I'm done with that. So here comes the younger ones that are going to try to work with you cooperatively. But we demonstrated over the years, since statehood, pre-statehood, that we could coexist with you. Our native languages can coexist with you. We all of us, we need to learn to speak the native languages for it to survive. I believe it's okay, and I think it's important for all of us to be bilingual with English and with our native languages in this state. There's state policy, state education standards, and state advertising and promotion. These are the things that pushed us out into just an English world. So these are the three areas that we need to work with. And I want to thank you for your public service as legislators. You're doing a great job here today. And I just want to take this minute to thank you all.
Anshish, are there any questions from the members of the committee for Mr. Bremner? Thank you. If anyone has written comments, they can be sent to house.community.and.regional.affairs@akleg.gov. Next, I'd like to invite Della Cheney forward. If you'd please come forward and place your name and affiliation on the record.
Aloha. My Haida name is Tathgawas. My Tlingit name is Katsawa. Born and raised in Cake, Alaska. I worked in the governor's office for 10 years, and I taught for 10 years Floyd Dryden Middle School. Worked at Sheldon Jackson College. Worked as a city administrator. So I love the life I've lived. I love the place I live. And there's so many different ways of looking at what we have experienced as Alaska Native people. When my parents went to boarding school, my mother was 10 years old when she first went to school, and she could only speak Haida. They did not have any nurturing. They were removed from their family. She was an older student. There were some people that were 5 years old and 6 years old that were removed from their family and sent to boarding schools with no nurturing. Didn't know what was happening to them. Didn't understand. Make the story short, some people didn't come back home. So my friend Bob Sam is bringing them home from Carlisle because that's where they passed. That's all the way across the country. Some of them came home, but like from Vietnam, didn't know what happened to them, didn't know where they are, didn't know what to do, no support. And I just went to a workshop about cultural relative teaching. And it says the same thing as it did in boarding school. It says that the ethnic groups anywhere in Alaska and the United States have not been recognized. We are invisible, and to Alaska Natives and American Indians, we are invisible in our own world, in our own land, in the school systems that are here. So we don't know how to grapple with that education from a place of comfort, from a place of nurturing, from a place of love. So we're doing the best we can with what we have. When my parents came home, they came home with no skills of a role model as a parent. They came home with no skills of cultural ways of knowing. Thank the Lord they both could speak their language till they left us and became powerful leaders in the state. So with the knowledge of their language and the knowledge of their ways, they had a firm setting to, a firm ground to walk on. And I have that too, but because of their love. Because I wasn't a boarding school student ever. I was born and raised in a community where I knew my parents, my siblings, my cousins, my whole extended family. So the love in me is bigger than some of those people who came home without it and are still not sure what's happened to them. So I appreciate your time and efforts in looking over this bill and hope that you will see that we want to move and grapple with education from a place of comfort and nurturing. Hawagurachish.
Are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, Anishchish Hawa. We'll next have Allison Marks, followed by Sarah Dipdal, followed by Alice Taff. Ms. Marks, would you please come forward?
Good morning. My name is Allison Marks. I'm a traditional artist and carver. Our Alaska Native languages are part of the state's history. These are languages that have been on the land during pre-contact. They were here when Alaska became a state, and they have existed on the land during every major event since. Alaskans from all backgrounds pride themselves in varying degrees to being different from the rest of the lower 48. We live in the last frontier. If we allow our languages to die, that we are moving further and further away from what makes Alaska unique. As Lance Twitchell mentioned earlier, for example, to visualize if the polar bear went extinct. If the polar bear went extinct, then we would have lost a vital and vibrant thread in Alaska's tapestry. And the same can be said about our Alaska Native languages. For example, in the Tlingit language, the Tlingit language contains sounds that are not heard in any other language on Earth, nowhere else in the world but here in our state. The state of our languages today and the near extinction of our languages that has brought about this linguistic emergency was a result of top-down policies. So with the governing bodies and the education systems actively repressing our languages, this repression is so ingrained in us today that we need these top-down policies to support our languages, and we need the support of our governing bodies to ensure the revitalization of our languages. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you again. Well, we do come to a decision point. We've gone over our allotted time, so I can either press through. I see that we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people left to testify, or we can hold testimony open and resume it on Thursday.
Mr. Chairman. That would be my preference. There's a busy day here, so, and I want to make sure and not limit people's ability to testify on this important issue. So if at all possible, I'd like to continue this.
Well, let me ask those present, is there anyone who would not be able to return on Thursday? Seeing only one, if you'd please come forward, put your name and affiliation on the record and give your testimony.
My name is Sarah Dibdal. I am here today on behalf of Central Council of Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska as their cultural heritage and education manager. Anshuatki Achsai Tlingit Kainach Sarah Dibdal Yuchat Duasak. Yehna Hatsati Takwane Di Ayachat. My name is Sarah Dibdal, as I stated. I'm originally from Klawak, Alaska, and I'm Tlingit. I'm here today on behalf of Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Tribes of Alaska, who is the largest recognized tribe in our state, representing 30,000 tribal citizens. Klinken Haida fully supports and urges the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to support HCR 19, urging Governor Bill Walker to issue an administrative order recognizing an linguistic emergency. And many of the things in our letter have already been stated, and you will find it, and it has been provided as a written record, so I'm going to address some things that I heard today. And in the report that was provided to you in the back, there are a list and an Appendix E of all the Alaska Native programs throughout our state. And it's a tremendous list of efforts, over 40 years of efforts, where we're starting to see the tide change amongst our languages. There's a story that our late, one of our giants that has left us, Clarence Jackson, he told a story about a tsunami that took place in Lituya Bay. And there was a tree that was standing on the side where everything had been washed away. And it said, Chet Sayi Achke. Can you hear me? In response, on the other side, there were trees. On the other side, that had grown back. Isa tu yach ach. I apologize if I missaid that. But what it said was, we hear you. And so what's being asked today is that this body here, you're the trees over there, and we're asking for you to hear us. Being heard is going to allow the forest, our languages, to regrow. The immersion programs are that tree, our languages are that tree. And the state of Alaska is on the other side, and we are asking to be heard. It's not zero sum for our languages prioritized. It's not zero sum. We're asking for equal advancement of our languages, advancement of our way of life. And to end, I was speaking to my son this morning, my 12-year-old, and I told him what I was going to be doing today. And I said, son, guess what I get to do today? I get to go speak in front of our representatives. And he was making his lunch, and he said, well, what on, Mom? And I said, well, about the state of our languages. And he's one of our few children in this Juneau School District that got to do the optional program, optional, where we have to drive our kids. We don't get the luxury of a school bus. We don't get the same opportunities to support our efforts. So it's on the parents to get their kids to Harborview for the Tlingit Cultural Language and Literacy Program. And he said, I wish they would just do a simple fix and make it so we can learn our languages in the school. We can learn French. We can learn Spanish. I said, I'm never going to have a use for that. And he said, can the state of Alaska start doing things smarter rather than harder? And with that, I'll leave you. Gunashish for your time.
Gunashish. We have several people who called in from off-net. I'm going to extend them the same courtesy of asking if they can return Thursday. If not, I'll take their testimony now. Superintendent McDonald, are you there?
Yes. I have, we're preparing for negotiations for later this week. I would appreciate if I had a chance to speak now, but I could make time to wait if it's pressing. But I do have an important perspective that I think you would appreciate.
Okay. I'm sure we would. And you've already waited for more than an hour and a half. So if it would interfere with your other duties there, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I have a unique perspective. I'm not Alaska Native. My name is Stuart Ivan McDonald, and growing up in the United States with that name makes a tough childhood. Stuart Little, Big Macs, Mayor McCheese, you can imagine. And it was in the preservation of Gaelic and other cultural things in my family helped me preserve a different identity. In the mid-90s, I was U.S. Clan Donald USA, Northwest Region, Alaska Commissioner, did the Highland Games and that sort of thing. I would greet you, in Gaelic. It's something that is a part of who I am. In Inupiaq, and Uvla Militak. These are more than words. They are actual frameworks of conceptual thinking. And one of the things that we need to pay attention to today, as I speak as a superintendent, if we worry about low graduation rate, then let's follow the numbers. You just heard testimony earlier today where a school has 100% graduation rate in Hawaii. Pay attention to that. The North Slope Borough School District in 2016 had a 58% graduation rate. They have for 7 years been developing an Inupiaq education framework. In 2017, they had 77% graduation rate. Follow the numbers. We have an integrated curriculum this year that is integrating language of the Inupiaq into our language arts curriculum. We are pushing for a different perspective to get a different result. Do things different, get a different result. Our job as educators is to build a positive, personal, powerful future vision for our students that connects them to education. This resolution that uses words like make it a priority. Imagine for a moment if we can, in fact, create this cooperation to work with the legislature and answer the question, what can government do and why government being involved? If we can move our education regulations to collect data like how many students are increasing their fluency in another language, create policies and rules in our state that asks, like you see in Hawaii, for 15% of all contracts and business exchanges to be required to be in their regional language, you will see this idea of priority emerge, where self-identity and language and the power in that framework emerges. We are doing some place-based learning, project-based learning with scientific entities up here studying sea ice with students, drones, high-tech equipment. And the only way to do that, to best understand the ice flow, erosion, and all of the projects that are going up here is to use the language of the Inupiaq to better understand the concepts of ice in a world where people have studied it longer. Research shows that bilingual students that have studied their language and English academically and with purpose are superior students. They perform better, they're better connected, they are a stronger academic voice, and they have more power than a monolinguistic student. Follow the data. This is a good choice, a good decision to move forward. We have just begun to scratch the surface of what's possible in brain research and culturally responsive teaching, and there's not enough time to get into the details, but I assure you, the numbers don't lie. If we want a different reality for our graduates and our students, this is the right first step And it's a step that's actually wrong to call it a first step. It's many steps have come before this step. It's time for us to stand up and grab a hold of what's possible here and make a huge difference in the way we go about business in Alaska. And I think in the long run, it'll be good for Alaska, good for all of us, non-Native and Native alike. It's the right move. Thank you for your time. I'll submit something much more detailed in writing and move forward. The North Slope Borough School District is beginning their continuing their work in language nests. We're trying to capture fluent speakers in a preschool program. We're one of the few places in Alaska that has a K-3, K-4, meaning 3-year-old, 4-year-old preschools. And we're working with our community to take the preservation serious. It's something that can be supported and legitimized by government, not because government's going to help, but when government allows the reporting and acknowledges the need for the presence of the language in everything that we do, then it helps a local effort be legitimized and validated. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent McDonald. I see I have two questions from the committee, one from Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Superintendent McDonald. It's good to hear your voice. This is a great opportunity to ask you if you have had a chance to examine one of the recommendations of Alaska's Education Challenge that the governor and the state school board brought forward earlier last year in terms of creating the option for self-governance, compacting for the delivery of education between the state of Alaska and tribes or tribally empowered Alaska Native organizations. This is one of the many numerous recommendations that the Alaska Education Challenge made, group of 120 people that worked over the state last year. Just wondering if you'd have time to examine how that can work since it's the State Board of Education is ahead of the other departments in terms of tribally allowing tribal compacts to move our education system forward.
Yes, I have, and I'm scrambling to try and be as brief as I can. These are big topics and subjects. Under our existing rules of local school boards can work with their local communities and the state using state and federal dollars to accomplish everything that exists within the concept of a compact now. It's just that the spelling out the rules and understanding what's allowable isn't as clear district to district. And the compacting, as long as the compacting is not an exit from the state to step away from the responsibility of public education in our communities, it's a good step forward. But we need to preserve the concept of public school. We have people from all over the world here in the North Slope, and to sit down with somebody, Boom, over in Arigal Coffee, who greets me with an Inupiaq word, good morning in Inupiaq. She tells me it's critically important that this is a public school system for all students, and the compacting needs to not sacrifice the notion of it's still a public school system for all students who choose to live within a community. I'm looking forward to seeing this idea develop. It's only a concept right now in the Education Challenge. And I think innate in our local control and school boards, most of the things and tools we need to make this go well exist already. We need to take advantage of that strong voice and local control backing supported by our state in helping us with reporting requirements and other things that would allow legitimizing our work and strengthening local control. In other words, let's learn more about what contacting means in Alaska. It's not been fully defined, and let's not sacrifice the full commitment the state has to public education in the process.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an important issue, and I don't want to rush it through. So, Commissioner, I do have a couple of quick questions. I think I heard you say in your last line of statement that we must be careful in public schools to tread a line carefully between using public schools to serve the specific needs of a subset, and you don't want us to get away from the concept that public schools are designed for all students. Is that a fair restatement of your position?
Yes, and the notion of the subset, one of the early views of the melting pot of America was in pluribus unum, and a more stronger view of us today is in pluribus pluribus for many, many. It's a system that we need to play to our strengths and our diversity, and this language resolution is critical. My Gaelic language survives because in the mid-90s there was a Scottish independent movement that finally took control and made sure that Gaelic was being taught in Gaelic parts of the world, and that language is now preserved for a person to be able to speak fluent English and any other language, and there was no worry that Gaelic would perish. Here in Alaska, language will perish if we don't take a similar move, and that's part of the for many, many. So it is a public school system that's complex. The greatest experiment in the United States is the best experiment in the entire world of making sure that public school serves all and has room to focus on individual groups without excluding others.
Thank you. So I appreciate, through the chair, appreciate you mentioning the dead language, Latin, the quotation, e pluribus unum, out of many, one, not out of many, many. But I couldn't speak Latin well enough to change that. You mentioned a couple things earlier. You said that language is a framework of conceptual thinking and that we're pushing for different results. On page 2 of the resolution, line 11 says that we should basically teach in a manner that is appropriate to the people's cultural methods of teaching and learning. My question, sir, do you think this resolution implies that there is a necessity of changing public school instructional methods? And I'll amplify that. Does teaching German or Japanese or Spanish require cultural-specific instructional methods?
We are actually watching, as we speak, the reinvention of mathematics instruction and are learning that there are wonderful tools involved in how Japanese math is taught versus how we have traditionally settled into a classic mathematics teaching. Our math itself is something that was borrowed from non-Western cultures. In higher math, we need to continue to grow, develop, and not be stagnant, and incorporate the best of what's being born out of other cultures. And again, I'm going to go back to the statistics. If we're okay with Alaska Natives and American Indians nationwide having low performance rates, then let's keep doing what we're doing. We must do something different and adopt the framework of thinking that is effective for all groups of students and adapt and be able to explore that. And I'm not content with the past performance. I need to see, as an educator and a superintendent, if we can do better. And I think that there's room for a discussion for us to do better in this. And so, yes, we need to change our framework in education to address all of our student needs.
Follow-up Representative Sutton.
Yes, thank you. That's so there are larger implications for the CONGDF, Alaska Public Schools. So I hear you saying that we must adopt a different framework. That's a larger change than a symbolic recognition of the official languages, and I think that's a little different than what I think people might assume, that having Alaska Native language as a adjunct language, such as Japanese or Russian or French or German, you envision a fundamental change, or considering the opportunity for fundamental changes in the way instruction is offered in Alaska Native languages. So that would imply kind of a double track. I'm concerned about the balkanization of the state and possibly the balkanization of our educational system to have different methods of instruction in different languages. We are a nation of people of different ethnic backgrounds, and English is our lingua franca, using Latin to describe French, which used to be the language that everyone in cultivated Europe would speak so they could hear understand each other. So I'm cautious about that. Another question, as an educator, what does priority mean to you? Should Alaska native languages be taught instead of Western languages or alongside of Western languages?
We were looking at our English language learners in Kodiak when I served there, and they had a low performance compared to their demographic groups. We discovered that when we allowed students to grow and flourish academically in their native language or their first language, and then built on academic English language, we saw their graduation rate move from the 47% range to 98-100% range. And we were able to do that without sacrificing anything. We saw an enhancement and enrichment. Similarly, the same thing with this Alaskan language component. And no one's asking for this resolution to be a one-size-fits-all silver bullet. It's a piece of a larger complex story, and it's a critical story. And this resolution is a good step forward to a very complex issue. No one is saying for one second we are trying to do away with an entire education framework. We're trying to grow and develop and mature this education framework to be inclusive so that the students in a balkanized system that have not been successful in it have the fighting chance to not be a statistic and a low-performing demographic, that all students have a chance to perform well. So little time, I will try and produce a better written statement, and I'm adding to this conversation. I'm in 100% agreement with most of the testimony you heard here today, and the parts that I might have a slight different opinion on is purely born out of my own personal ignorance, and I can't be the answer for a group of people any more than somebody could help understand why it was important to me to know that McDonald's meant something more than Big Macs. Okay. As a kid growing up.
So to follow up, so again, specifically, what does priority mean to you as an educator? I'm looking for a specific answer. Should Alaska native languages be taught alongside of French, German, or English, or should they be taught instead of English, French, German, Spanish?
Representative Sadler, actually, at this time I'm going to invite forward Representative Ortiz's staff with,
if I can get
with
an answer
your permission,
from witness,
Mr.
Chairman. If I can get an answer to the question to the witness, please, before.
Superintendent McDonald, would you like to give your own definition or defer to the bill sponsor staff?
I would defer
Mr. Chairman,
I'll submit the rest of my answer in writing.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Mr. Chairman,
Mike Sadler,
it was my question to that specific witness. I'd appreciate if you could answer it.
Yeah. He has the option, and he can submit that in writing as well.
Good deal. So will you? When do you plan to think you can get that answer to me, sir?
That'll be up to Mr. McDonald, of course.
Okay, so let the record show my question was
no later than tomorrow, certainly by Thursday.
Thank you, Superintendent McDonald.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll ask my question of the witness in front of me. What does priority mean to you? Does it mean that Alaska Native languages should be taught instead of English or Spanish or German or French or alongside?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Sadler. The specific language in this resolution on page 2 reminds 19 to 20.
Would you please place your name on the record again?
Apologies.
Thank you.
Jody Gatti, staff to Representative Ortiz. So the specific language in the resolution asks for legislative and policy measures that prioritize the survival and continued use of Alaska Native languages. It does not specifically say that we're going to prioritize it over other languages, teach it instead of other languages. It was specific wording chosen by the office. prioritizing the survival of languages, not prioritizing it over other languages. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And as we're now about half an hour over time and at less than half strength as a committee,
certainly,
it would be my preference to end the testimony at this point and to resume it Thursday, at which point we'll also entertain amendments, which will be due to my office by no later than 4 o'clock tomorrow. Representative Sapper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Ms. Getty, through the chair, so on page 2, line 19, I should not read this to say that the resolution supports legislative and policy measures prioritizing Alaska Native languages over any other languages. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you again. I'm going to check in with Mr. Hayton of the Doyen Foundation. Mr. Hayton, would you be available to either submit your comments in written form or to return Thursday to provide your testimony?
I'll be able to.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. Yes, I'll be able to return on Thursday.
Finally, we have Jenna Hartrett from the North Slope Borough School District.
Hello, yes, this is Jenna Hartrett with the North Slope Borough School District. I'll be able to come back on Thursday as well as submit a written piece. Thank you.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. And I appreciate your patience. I see you've been online for an hour and a half as well. With that, I will hold public testimony open. Our next meeting is Thursday, March 8th at 8 a.m. And again, amendments are due Wednesday, March 7th by 4 p.m. and can be delivered to Patrick Cornish.
Mr. Chairman, could you say again the time, please? Time and date?
The next meeting will be Thursday, March 8th at 8 a.m. And the amendments are due Wednesday, March 7th by 4 p.m. With that, this meeting is now adjourned at 10:31 a.m.